Parkcast, the UK's original theme park podcast.
Welcome back to Parkcast Park Fans. I've not been here for a couple of weeks, been on my holidays, but we're back now, and that is the most important thing. If you're new here, we are a podcast for theme park fans. So if that's you, you have found yourself in the right place. Congratulations. I'm Bex, and this week I'm joined by my fellow two musketeers. We've got Alex Brindley live from the Isle of Man.
Good morning.
He's overseas, but he's with us. And also overseas is Glenn Roberts and the Notable Stranger, who's joining us from Germany.
Guten Morgen.
It's like this is like a mini like international setup now.
Yeah. It's almost like the end of Eurovision. But let's go to the end of Eurovision.
the ones who are bringing up the rear. It's us three.
I'm gonna have like a backdrop of Nuremberg by night.
Well, I have been away for a couple of weeks. I hope you didn't miss Parkcast too much. I did have had a few, so many requests of people saying, when's it coming back? Well, we're back now. And this week, I have to talk about the shambles that I was brought home to. Actually, it happened whilst I was on holiday. It interrupted my holiday quite rudely. And I had to do a video about it, but now I feel like it needs a podcast of its own. And this is sponsorships within theme parks, the good, the bad, the bloody ugly, to be fair, which is the one that has created today's episode. But we're not just going to talk about that. We are going to talk about ones through the years that we think have worked, not worked, why they've worked, and why some have stood the test of time and others should never have been allowed in the first place. So obviously the sponsorship that has created this today is the most recent one at Thorpe Park, where they have aligned Hyperia with Flips, and they've allowed Hyperia to be rebranded as Flipseria, which... Now, I have to say, if you are new to this episode, I used to work in radio. I've worked in radio for a long time. Alex is currently working in radio. He is a content director at Manx Radio on the Isle of Man. And in radio, we deal with this kind of stuff all the time. So this is kind of our bread and butter. If you've ever listened to a commercial radio station, you will know you hear sponsorships a lot. This is how we get our money in. So we are very familiar with how this kind of stuff works. So we're going to be opinionated on this. But that, I mean, your reaction there was my first reaction when it was Flipseria. That just doesn't work.
No, I mean, it doesn't work. It's, I mean, it doesn't scan even as a name, but also this is where I'll get into we'll start on the radio bit. It's about your brand equity. There we go. There's a phrase that people use, and brand association. So either if you're a brand, you want to raise awareness of your company, your brand, your product by associating it with something that's already got a high profile. So on radio, it's a case of I want to sponsor a breakfast show in order to raise my brand awareness. But then there is the other side of it. Is it a fit? That's the big thing. Does it fit with that brand? And if it's a no, that's when it becomes jarring. And that is normally where you turn around in radio and go, actually, maybe this is a better fit, and you work with them. I mean, I remember many, many, many years ago, a fantastic one example of how not to do it was a birthday list that we had running, a traditional commercial radio thing, you know, a birthday list. You ring up, put someone's name on the birthday list, and you win something. So it used to be like an ice cream birthday cake was the legendary prize we had. Then it was sold to a car.
How'd you put that through the post?
Well, exactly. Well, no. They went and got it. You see, it's a little island. People can go get stuff easily. But it then got sold to a carpet warehouse where you won a doormat. And it lasted about 3 weeks because, surprise, surprise, no one was entering. No one's got, I'll tell you what I want for my birthday. I want a doormat. You know, that is not a brand that goes well
together. Your wife's already got one of them.
Exactly. Yeah, yes. Hello, dear. They don't go well together. So the brands have got to go well. They've got to associate each other. But I was thinking when you asked us to do this podcast, sponsorship isn't new for theme parks. I mean, Disney... The all-powerful Disney with all their multi-billions and things like this, they've always relied on sponsorship. I mean, you know, if you know your history of Disneyland 55, it wouldn't have got off the ground if they hadn't sold sponsorships to, you know, Swift Chicken Company, I think was the first one, Swift Restaurants with their chicken company. The World of Bras, you know, on Main Street. All those little shops on Main Street didn't used to be Disney souvenirs. They used to be concessions that were sold off as sponsorships, you know. But even back then, when all those little shops down Main Street were sold off as sponsorship to raise money for the construction of the park, they had to be creatively in keeping. So even the Wizard of Bras, the Wizard of Bras is the most outstanding one. I think it only lasted about 2 years. Not many people went to Disneyland to buy a bra, but
it sounds like a dodgy adult film.
It does, yeah. Whereas it became an in-keeping Victoriana style shop. There was a display talking about the history of undergarments and everything else. But even now, Disney have huge sponsorships on a lot of their theme park rides, but it doesn't take away from the creative creation of the ride. You know, Spaceship Earth, I don't know who sponsors it now. It used to be Siemens sponsored Spaceship Earth. And, you know, you didn't go halfway through the history of the evolution of communication through Spaceship Earth and suddenly halfway through it goes, oh, and by the way, we're just interrupting this for a brief broadcast from our sponsor. You know, even Disney and the Americans, who are not known for subtlety, managed to get sponsorship right. And it's not all about the money. And actually, you could argue that if it's all about the money and it's done like Flipzeria, it does a disservice to both brands, because actually, I've not been on Hyperia yet. I'm a little sore that it took the big ones record. So, you know, it'll take me a while to get over that. But it was a good brand of coaster, you know, for a UK coaster. And the fact that Flipzeria has come along now and almost tarnished that brand doesn't put Flips, or whatever they're called, in a good light for me. So it's actually done disservice to the people who want to advertise in the first place. Although I still don't know. What are they? Flips?
Have either of you had Flips before?
No, they're not a thing here.
They are, they're quite delicious, actually. They're chocolate-covered pretzels. Well, they do chocolate, but they also do like fudge ones, white chocolate, cookie flavor. I think they're really nice. I like a sweet and salty combo. So for me, they work.
But the fact that they've done this to a ride and then it's had that reaction to you, how do you view the product now?
I know. And this is the thing.
Will you boycott?
I feel like if I saw them in Tesco now, I'd shake my fist at them. It is weird, but on the flip side.
Oh, gosh.
That wasn't intentional.
Oh, how long did that take you?
Yeah, hashtag endorsed. Yeah.
There have been a few enthusiasts where I posted about this online saying, oh, do you know what? I'd never bought a bag of Flips until this, and now I have tried them. And in a way, people are justifying the sponsorship and say, oh, it's worked, because I've never heard of them or never thought of them before, and now I've gone and bought them. My response to that would be, yes. And brand exposure can work in that way. Stick your brand somewhere and someone will go, oh, what's that? I'll have a try.
Watch any Bond film.
Yeah.
What are you wearing? Easily influenced.
Yeah. What watch is that, by the way?
It's an Amiga Seamaster as worn by Pierce Brosnan.
The best Bond, obviously. Exactly. The only Bond.
Yes.
I'd like to point out that my new watch is nowhere as exciting. However, it is a big one watch from the Pleasure Beach. So
there you go. On brand as well.
With me, Victor's mug, which isn't designed for people who are right-handed, because the brand just has nothing on this side. I need to become left-handed.
Oh, yeah. I see, yeah.
Oh, just feed that one back. Yes, you can obviously get people to buy your product by just associating it in this way, but this is quite an expensive way to get people to try your product. And there is a thing that you do in marketing, which is creating trial. And you could have got people to try your product by sending them down a high street with a load of little mini bags of Flips to give away and just hand them out. And you would have had the same effects that people would have tried your product who've never tried it before and either gone, oh, they're delicious, I'll buy some more, or ugh, no, I'll never have them again. But the net effect on that is the same. Usually, if you want to sponsor something or you are investing in a sponsorship, it's because you want something a little bit more meaningful, a little bit deeper. You want a better connection than just, hey, try our Flips. You're trying to create a bit more recall in people's minds. And the other interesting thing about this sponsorship to me, and we would never do this in radio, or certainly I never would. I don't know if your standards are any lower than
Are you casting aspersions, Rebecca?
I'm going to say yes before he answers.
Probably, yeah.
It's only apparently running until the start of September. So it's basically a 3-week sponsorship.
What? Yeah. Normally, I mean, you would be reluctant to take... I mean, I'm not the sales director, so don't get me wrong here, but, you know...
Get him in.
That 6 months, it would be a bare minimum. You'd normally go for a year-long sponsorship. There's two sides to this Flipseria story, from my perspective, in terms of the sponsorship, is that, number one, it does depend on how good the salesperson has been. Because let's be honest, that if the salesperson who's done this deal from Thorpe Park's side has sold a really, really good pitch, you know, what's the phrase, you know, sell ice to the Eskimos. Well, that's possibly why it's happened. Whether it will give the value that they've paid for it is a very different matter. And once again, using the Disneyland, you know, the never spoken of C.V. Wood, who helped build Disneyland. And of course, Disney now never speak of him. But he was, of course, the Texan who could, you know, charm money out of anybody. So there could be an element of that. The other side of things is that I don't know how much is this sponsorship cost for about 3 weeks or something stupid?
I've only heard through the enthusiast grapevine. I've heard the figure I've heard is $100,000.
Ooh. I mean, you could argue that because it's got so much attention that $100,000, what we're doing now is going to count towards that report.
I mean, they've got a whole podcast.
Look at the amount of exposure we've got. Yeah, Parkcast did an episode on it and everything else like this. And all we're doing is adding to that the value of that sponsorship. So there is the shock factor thing. Yeah, I mean, let's be honest, as far as they're concerned, flips weren't available in Germany. But after today, you know, knowledge has spread far and wide.
I'll be going to my local Reeve and demanding to see a packet of them. Yes.
So, only
for when you visit. So, I won't like to. I'll just leave them for when you come visit.
Oh, thanks.
You can heat them clandestinely. Sorry?
He hasn't invited me yet. Just saying, Beck.
Sorry. I remember a text the other day, but fine. Don't worry about it.
Okay. Yeah, maybe you did. It was a bit late at night. I'd had a whiskey. But the thing is that I would say that this is the kind of sponsorship that works well in the social media age, sadly, which is that it's got shock and awe and people, because you can see the artwork. The artwork is designed to not even blend in.
It's not even trying, is it? Yeah, it's no. Literally slap that word in front of the rest of the logo.
Whereas if you go back, the ones that really worked and then... in a sort of not sort of pre-social media age, but you know, the Pepsi Max big one. That I mean, no one can. If can you find a definitive date of when it became the big one instead of the Pepsi Max big
one?
Because
it wasn't that long ago.
No,
it really wasn't that long ago. It was only a few years.
I think it was the start of last year.
Or the
year before. No,
it was when they did the cans, didn't they? They've rebranded the cans.
Yeah.
However, the ride itself has been the big one since 2012 because they changed the sign over the entrance area. So no one seems to. But that's obviously worked brilliantly for Pepsi because everyone calls it the Pepsi Max.
Yeah,
but
even now.
But it's the ride is still called the big one. The problem with this is they've changed the name of the ride. But was the ride already established enough as a name, as a brand in its own little world, to then start messing around with the wording?
Yeah, no.
Well, I agree, because the problem with the big one is it was always launched as the Pepsi Max big one. The sponsorship was there when it was launched. Now, a prime example, and I hate to diss my favourite park, but Launchpad. Now, that was launched as PlayStation the Ride. So that was a sponsorship without a name, really.
Yeah, there
was
no brand. It didn't have another name, did it?
And then it became Ice Blast the Ride. So basically, it then became a drink. And now, thankfully, it's become Launchpad. Now, if it became Launchpad, well, I don't know, sponsored by, you know, Glenn's Secondhand Motors or whatever, at least then the ride has an identity. I would argue that that's not a good pairing, you know, but it does make you wonder where it's going to end, because if you're going for good pairings in sponsorships, I always thought like the Echo Arena in Liverpool was good, because it said what it is, the M&S Bank Arena.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I still call the arena in Manchester the G-Mex. because that's what it was originally called, and it's come through 100 different names. But it's like football stadiums as well. They change the names, but people just tend to stick with whatever they grew up with.
Yeah, so, I mean, when the sponsorship for Man City, and sorry to mention that, Glenn, closure is, but my kids support Man City. When that ends, that's just known as the Etihad. It's known as the Etihad Stadium. And I actually didn't realise until I got dragged to try and understand what football was all about to the stadium. And I'm like, oh, that's the sponsor. I just thought it was the name of the stadium. But how far do you go? Because it's things like if you're going for appropriate sponsorships that reflect rides and things like this, you know, I can't think of many products that, you know, when the River Caves comes back, the Tunnel of Love brought to you by Viagra.
I mean, well, hey, now, do you remember?
I dreamt about this is going.
Jest.
Oh, I'm doing sexy music for that.
Well, hey, hit that button, DJ, because here we go. Do you not remember when not long after Oblivion opened, or it might have been as it opened, you could buy in the Oblivion shop?
Yes.
Branded Durex condoms, branded Oblivion.
No.
Yeah. Have you still got any?
No, but they are in the Alton Towers archive, which is open for the next few days.
Wow.
And you can get, they have got some there. But yeah, that, I mean, God, yeah.
Yeah, wouldn't trust them after that.
I actually think it's genius, but because of the whole shock factor thing,
yeah.
I mean, obviously Oblivion, the big black hole, don't look down, all of that stuff. And then you've got these for sale in the shop. Not exactly PG family friendly.
I hadn't made that connection, but thanks.
I've got a Manx Radio goodie bag, which suspiciously looked like it had those in them.
They were tea bags. They're tea bags. They just suspiciously look like.
I dare not open one. I don't care. That's what you tell your mother. Yeah, there's tea bags.
We've run out now, by the way. Sorry. But you speak there, though, Bex, about Oblivion. We've said the Pepsi Max big one. There was a time when it was drinks brands because we will probably get onto the Iron Brew Revolution. We've said the Ice Blast. Wasn't it Tango that...
Fanta.
Fanta, that was
God.
It. Fanta at
it gives
Oblivion.
Me the shivers just thinking about it. And that's got to be up there with the worst. Flip Zero or the Fanta Oblivion. I don't know which was worst. Yeah, that was a classic example of the Oblivion brand had been so well executed from before the ride was even open. They had really gone to town with creating this atmosphere around the ride. What's it going to be? Creating a backstory all about
Prince of Darkness.
Yeah. And it was so well done. It was so well executed. It's the first time they'd ever used actors before the ride had even opened around the construction site. I mean, it was genius marketing. And if you've ever watched the Magic Factory documentary, if you haven't, go and watch it on YouTube, and you see some of the backstory and what they were doing with the marketing of that, and when they did the advert and everything for it, and everything was absolutely perfect. And then a couple of years later, they go, do you know what, let's just slap Fanta on the front of it because it's orange. And it was like all of this dark apocalyptic world that you'd created then had Fanta. And it was just, why have you taken the money for that? And people can scream till they're blue in the face. Well, they've got to take the money. They're a business. They've got to take the money. I will die on this hill. You do not always have to take the money. And actually, Glenn, I know that you know about this because you don't just do theme park music. You do have some other music, which has often been asked for to be licensed for various commercial purposes. And you don't always say yes.
I very rarely say yes, actually. It's weird. I tend to take a moral stance on it, which I know I don't usually have very many, but things like that. The worst ones are those daytime commercials for charities that want licensing, and they're extremely long commercials. And so usually it's a 30 second and a 1.5 minute commercial. And so you'd license it on both of them. And then, charity commercials, God, 3-4 minutes. And they want it at a very reduced rate because, we're a charity, but we're, blanket coverage during the day. So you're finding money for
cheap.
That. Yeah. So that's always been an absolute no. I don't care how. And funnily enough, they get very deep pockets when you say no and offer you going rate and above and everything else. And you, no, still say no. Stuff that has been licensed. There was a very famous and long-running sanitary product commercial that ran forever and ever and ever. it was I didn't know it had been licensed. Somebody else licensed it on my behalf because the money was good. And yeah, I was.
I do like the way that you've just given us the argument about the fact that I say no.
That's why control was taken back.
But yeah, that's what I was going to say. Were you annoyed then when you heard that? Were you like, I wouldn't have.
I was damn furious until until the check started coming in. Then and then they extended. And then they extended, and then they extended, then they went worldwide. So that was, yeah, woo, hello.
From a moral point of view, then, does that...
A moral point of view, yeah, it's a thing that everybody, well, half the population needs, so it wasn't a prudish thing. It was just I'd seen the storyboard and stuff, and just I thought it didn't really fit, to be honest.
Yeah.
And
I suppose there's a chance, then, that when it doesn't fit, it can have a negative impact on your music because people will then associate your music with that product. And if you're like, well, I don't really want it associated with that forever.
There is that kind of car commercials have licensed in the last couple of years. And but they wanted a kind of 90s rave kind of atmosphere. Yeah, there you go, Alex. Alex is popping the mood.
Yeah, it's a big fish, little fish cardboard box. I'll do the background.
There you go. Especially for the YouTube videos. There you go. and that was cool and it fit. And yeah, it was something I did, many, 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 many years ago on a Tuesday afternoon. And then all of a sudden it's paying for itself. But it is weird. You do get a lot of them, especially there's like a weird. So you'll have a record out and then it's kind of circulated and then gone into like a 6 months. Oh yeah, I remember that kind of thing. And that tends to be when they strike. I don't know. I do know people who work in advertising, so it's not that long a time frame to organise all this. But they kind of always want to go for something that's established, but still current kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so you do tend to get a wave of them, or used to get a wave of them about 6 months to a year after the peak.
In terms of your music, I'm now curious. I'm going to go online on YouTube and watch tons and tons of sanitary product adverts now to work out which song it was he's talking about. But in terms of covers, so if someone covers your song, I'm not going to say which, but I sent you a video message recently where I'd spotted a song being used. Now, does that require your permission if they're going to do a cover version of it or a live performed version?
We're in publishing that. If you use the actual record, that's mechanical. Yeah. And so, yeah, you kind of have to get permission. Publishing, on the other hand, where you're just doing a cover, I suppose you could do an absolute objection, but they're doing a cover, so anybody can cover your songs, really. It's could you put an objection up? Probably. But
I mean, I'll tell you now, Bex, I'll send you the video. It was improvement on the original, I thought.
They always are.
How can you improve on perfection?
Because you know, the hard work's already been done. Anybody can like stick it into a door, a computer, and just move the already established blocks around.
I mean, but in terms of theme parks, thinking there then, so obviously we'd say that, yeah, as soon as we mentioned the Fanta Oblivion and now possibly Flip Siri and things like this, and what was another one? Ribena Rumba Rapids, did you mention?
I don't mind the Ribena Rumba Rapids. I don't know why, but to me,
there's an alliteration there.
Yeah, that's one thing, definitely. It rolls
off
the
tongue. Rapids are meant to be exciting, not little kiddie berries going, woohoo! You know,
that is kind of what little rapid boats are, though, aren't they? They're bouncing off the sides, and I don't know. I didn't mind if they'd done the water purple as well. No.
Oh, they missed that. If the Pleasure Beach can turn it blue, I'm sure purple's just a bit more, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
I have a question for Alex. Can I have a question, please?
Yeah, okay.
being a Disney fan, and Disney want to immerse you in a fairy tale universe, and the world doesn't matter anymore outside. Does it take it away having the Hertz go karts or whatever?
Completely, unless it's done in a sympathetic way. So I would argue that, yes, I think Hertz and modern companies and things like that, yet, and I've had this thought ran in my mind a lot with when it comes to my little steam railway as well, because if the period of time you are transporting someone to, say like the, you know, Americana, early turn of the century or turn of the last century, it did have advertising. So the advertising must be done in that style. So when, like Disneyland Paris, above their main street, you've got those big advert hoardings for Coca-Cola and also a coffee shop and things like that, because the coffee cup actually still has steam coming out of it every day. Those kind of adverts are in keeping. So if the advertising is in keeping with the style, yes. But if it's, I mean, I don't know who's, I think it's Honda are sponsoring the Autopia at Disneyland Paris in their Discovery Land. But the branding of it all suits that sort of steampunk modern aesthetic. So the name doesn't really put me off because I'm still within that period. Could I be happy without it? Most definitely, yes. It's one of the reasons I love PortAventura so much that whatever branding and sponsorship they've got doesn't seem to stand out hugely for me when I'm walking through the Far West and pointing out where there's lots of paint that needs redoing and some ride maintenance, dig.
Another episode.
Yeah. But they're on the Western buildings, they've got in-period adverts. I don't know if they're recent companies or they're just made-up companies, but it's part of the aesthetic. Same with Mediterranean. They've got loads, I presume, of different brands in there. For certain types of drinks. Estrella Damm, of course, is one that's all over the park, but it fits because it fits with the Mediterranean theme. So, yeah, if it's done incorrectly, I would say it takes me out. If I'm completely honest, Glenn, I'm more offended by the shoehorning of IP into Disney where it's not needed.
Yeah.
I love the recent announcements about Piston Peak, but I wouldn't have got rid of a Rivers of America to do it. I think that's, you know, having cars with big eyes flying past your frontier land, those two don't go together no matter how much they're going to try and shoehorn them together. So IP offends me more. Do you think, when just chatting now, is it just a British thing? Because
I was just about to say when you were talking about brands that complement each other and work well together, one that you don't really think about a lot, but it is there at Europa Park, is Voltron being sponsored by Rimac. So, and this, I mean, it's not an in-your-face sponsorship in many ways, as in there's not huge Rimac flags all around Voltron or anything like that, but it is on the signage. It is on the merch. I've got a T-shirt and it literally says sponsored by Rimac, or powered by Rimac, I think is what they use. But outside of the entrance, they've also got a massive glass box with a Rimac car in it. But to me, that is a perfect example of two brands elevating each other. Rimac is obviously a hugely prestige brand. I mean, I don't know much about cars. Glenn, you might know. How much would one of the car in the glass box
be? Is Rimac a car?
It's a really low volume electric car.
I thought it was, isn't it like ladies' leg shavers or
that's
something
what
like.
I thought, thank you.
What are you thinking of? I don't
IMAC.
Know.
Is it IMAC then?
Oh, IMAC. Oh, it's not called, it's called Veet now.
Oh, right.
But Blue Fire was sponsored by Gazprom. Joy Ronkin, you know, for a long time. It was sponsored by Gazprom, and then the Ukraine war started, and it eventually went.
Yeah.
Well, okay, let's take it to the next level, because my thought was that British theme parks, because as we've said before, I don't think British theme parks do theming and immersion very well. We do amusement parks well. I wouldn't say Alton Towers is particularly well themed. I don't feel when I'm walking into the Forbidden Valley, it's, you know, a desolate wasteland with all the beautiful manicured trees. I don't feel that X Sector is a forgotten government facility. It doesn't feel sinister. Whereas other theme parks, from your Disney's, even your Fantasialands and Universals, are very good at that immersive environment. But the ultimate one, I feel, for sponsorship. And I keep going there whenever I'm there, and I'm desperately trying to like it. Is Ferrari Land at? Mm-hmm. And I know it's not the only one in the world, but that's just a brand. And you sit there going, they're desperate to find anything to go in there that has some kind of relation to Ferrari. But really, it's just a massive advert, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, but it does fit, especially the one obviously that you're talking about in Salou has got Red Force, so a very fast roller coaster. Mm-hmm. And obviously it kind of works with that. I think that my issue with Ferrari Land there is it's always felt half done. It's always felt very unpopulated in terms of the number of rides they've got there. There's lots of like gaps, you know, there should really be something here. So in a way, I think that does a disservice to the Ferrari brand there because it feels a bit half finished. It doesn't feel like a perfect.
You've never sat in a Ferrari, have you?
Well, but maybe then. It's...
Are you saying that is exactly what it feels like to own a Ferrari? Then?
The dealers usually, not that I've ever owned one, but the dealers usually see them more of them than you do.
All right. In that case, maybe it's very on brand. But yeah, I mean, yeah, whole theme park just literally dedicated to a brand. It has been, there's a football theme park opening in, or has opened in the Middle East, I think. Say, I can't remember which club it was, but they've done one. I don't know. Sometimes it's like it goes too far, I think. And that you're in Ferrari land and you're probably going to buy a Ferrari cap or something whilst you're there, but no one's walking out of that park going, now I'm going to go and buy a Ferrari. I mean, that is literally just us positioning ourselves as a really cool brand and concept. It's not a kind of.
But it goes back to, if we take this back to the radio side of things, it goes back to was this creatively driven or financially driven? Because I've known competitions over the years which are driven by the sponsor wanting to do this, and the audience just don't get on board because if it's creative and a good mechanic, quite frankly, I can give away a pencil and you'd have hundreds of entries if it's a good competition and people want to enter. And Glenn knows it's built a text bill up over the years.
Yeah, I've entered every single day. Have I ever won one? No. No. No.
What a pity. No, however, if you've got we had a competition I can remember many, 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 many years ago. It's a couple of decades ago now, I think, that had a huge prize, but the mechanic was so lackluster and complex because to keep the sponsors happy that no one really entered, and it didn't last very long. So that Ferrari Land is almost akin to that in terms of sponsorship, which I feel that the theme park itself, it's got Red Force, yes, it's got some drop towers, both of which are different, but you can't choose which one you go on. That was a bit annoying. And like an Autopia ride. It's got a very, very nice Italian restaurant, but it's a case of, well, we need to do something Ferrari because Ferrari are going to slap their name on this and give us a load of money. It wasn't driven by the creative need to build a second park. That's where I think a lot of the themed rides go wrong. It's a case of the Pepsi Max big one, you could argue, was the big one. It's about the ride and Pepsi associate their name with it. Whereas when we got... the what is now Launchpad, it was PlayStation the ride, but for certain people it's still PlayStation, certain people it's still the Ice Blast, and you're constantly then fighting when you reimagine the ride or the sponsorship ends to keep that ride relevant, and I think that's part of the problem.
I think it works a lot better when there is a ride, and if you attach a sponsor to it, it is either put well in front of it or it's like Voltron powered by Rimac. So you can easily then remove that sponsor and the ride still retains all its like brand integrity around it.
Evictus, brought to you by the Notable Strangers Sanitary Products.
Hey, Launchpad. Amanda.
Oh, there we go. Rock bottom, we found the level.
Was the big one blue and red? Because of Pepsi.
Assumed that was part of the reason it worked so well, but I have never heard it was ever going to be any other colour.
No, because all the artwork was that colour, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah. And I mean,
it has got the white bit over. I did see some artwork. I remember the original sort of newspaper pullout at the time, you know, that had the picture of John Major there with the model and Geoffrey Thompson and everything else. And I do remember seeing something where the track supports were white with red, which is the standard Pleasure Beach colour for the roller coasters at the time, wasn't it? You know, white.
Oh, right.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll tell you something, though. I think it was a wise decision because where it is... on the coast there, battling all that, the rust streaks you'd see on
a yellow
structure would look white structure would look awful. So
yeah,
I think that was a good decision. But the only reason we actually get the tunnel at the beginning was just to put the Pepsi cans there.
But yeah. it's iconic now, and now even though Pepsi don't sponsor it, the cans are still there.
Yeah.
You couldn't get rid of them. And I think it is part of the reason why that sponsorship works so well. Yes, you've got the colours. You've got the fact that Pepsi Max was just like not tried to integrate into the name itself. You went through the cans. But also, I think if you remember it at the time, it's easy to remember. If you weren't there, it's very hard to imagine. The hype around the big one opening was huge.
Yeah.
I mean, we had never seen anything like it. And as much as you can look at the big one now and go, oh, well, you know, it's janky and it's that and it's what the other. In 1994, this was the most exciting thing that could be happening in the UK, to have the world's tallest roller coaster being built and us watching it go up. And we didn't have internet, so we were only watching it through the odd like newspaper article or news report or whatever. Or if you're lucky enough to live close enough, you could obviously go and see it happening as well. But
also, do you remember looking up at it the first time you saw it? As you get older, you get used to it. It seems to get shorter. I don't know why.
Yeah. Oh, I remember the first time I saw it. Oh my! Because you're approaching from like the Stargate end, and so it was just this thing.
Yeah.
And never going on that.
Whereas, obviously, when we were there recently, Glenn, you were so happy on the lift hill. You and I were having a lovely chat. But I was telling you how you could look down and see the view.
And I was telling you many ways to go away.
He has never been that. In all our years of friendship, he has never been that direct, blunt and obsessed with me. He's trying to strike up a conversation on the lift to the
50 feet is high.
If you did miss the last episode where we talked about this, we did get on the wheel check train. So we were being held on the big one for a while. But yeah, there was all these little elements that went into the Pepsi Max and the big one, which I think is why people called it the Pepsi Max. Obviously, it being at the start of the name, it naturally got shortened probably in that way. But the association between those two things happening, and Pepsi Max was new at the time. It wasn't a thing. It launched Pepsi Max into the UK. And oh my God, what a way to do it and create the success of that brand by aligning yourself with what was about to be the world's tallest roller coaster, tallest, fastest, steepest. I think they had the claim for as well, didn't they?
That sponsorship, as you say, it worked. Pepsi Max was launched, it became a brand, and everyone knows it still as the Pepsi Max. Whereas, does anyone ever turn around and go, oh, the Daily Star Valhalla, you know, the UK's largest millennium project, probably, you know, and it was Daily Star. No one even remembers it, really.
No. I mean, I'd forgotten until you just mentioned it then and came back. Like,
what about the Eddie Staubart trucks then? Where are we on that?
Oh, I see. I like that. Perfect. Obviously, sadly not running at the moment. But yeah, of course, if you've got a little truck ride, of course, get Eddie. I wonder if Eddie Staubart did actually pay for that or not, or if that was just a...
Well, they'd have to for licensing. They can't use the likeness for... They can't just paint the trucks in...
No, but I wonder if they just said to Eddie Staubart, we'll put your brand on.
Oh, can we do it? Yeah.
Is that a perfect example, though, of the... It's almost creatively led, because you're right. We don't... A really successful sponsorship almost shouldn't feel jarring at all. Now, that seems like a perfect match.
It's probably the best branding ever.
It's the best branding ever.
Well, we're talking about jarring. Mm-hmm. There was a time in the, I'm going to say, late 90s, early 2000s, where... a bubble bath company took over a couple of our rides, and one I think worked reasonably well. The other one, horrific. Of course, Imperial Leather took over the Log Flume at Alton Towers, and God bless its soul, the Bubble Works at Chessington. Now, John Wardley himself has been on this podcast and was very direct with his thoughts about when Imperial Leather rebranded the Bubble Works. Go back and listen to that episode if you want. But basically, he hated it. Do you remember the Bubble Works pre-Imperial Leather?
No. Okay. I remember the... Oh, do I? Don't I? I'm not even sure I remember. No, I don't remember the log flume Alton Towers before it was Imperial either. I think.
Don't you?
I will have been on it, but I can't recall it because all I ever remember is those terrifying sodding ducks.
Well, and they. Okay, we'll talk about the log flume. So the log flume obviously before was just a standard log flume, log boats. Imperial Leather sponsored it. They changed the logs into bathtubs and they put a terrifying duck in the little hut before you drop down the final drop, who is now in the Curse of Alton Manor, so I've been told on this podcast. And they also changed the ride music to be basically a version of what they had on their TV adverts at the time, which was a version of Disco Inferno. So when you were on the ride, you were hearing their TV advert music. You were seeing them.
That's going far too far. That really is.
Ears are
No, but to have it blasted at you, this is just marketing. This is just marketing. I've paid to get in, thank you. No. Right, let me in for free or whatever. Give everybody a fast pass for that one or whatever. But no, don't make me pay for something and then bombard me with something. That's almost like there was a trend a few years ago. In fact, when I was filling the car up in France last week, they still do it in France. As soon as the pump went into the car, the screen that you paid for the fuel on started playing adverts at you while you were stood there. And it's like, no, I'm paying well over the odds of fuel as it is. I'm not being subjected to marketing while I've already paid for something.
You mentioned that obviously for that log flume though. We were saying the rumored, whispered 100 grand or whatever it was for Flips Area. Mm. If you were changing all the logs for bathtubs and all that props, as well as paying for the advertising contract, because you're not going to retheme everything and then say, well, we're not taking a cut, please, on top of it. There's no point in it. That must have cost a fortune, that sponsorship.
I would love to know. And obviously, that is something that was a long-term thing. It wasn't, we'll do this for 3 weeks and bye-bye. Mm. So in a way, I'm much more okay with that. I'm much more okay with the log flume anyway, because actually I think it's quite an innovative take on the log flume by being in a bathtub. Mm. I quite
and
like
really,
that.
The log flume wasn't really themed on time. No. It's not as if you're running through a Western land, with
exactly.
a log timber works at the end of it.
It kind of gave it a really... bit of a theme in a way, in a weird way. So it kind of worked. I wasn't mad about it. The bubble works. So the original bubble works, which John Wardley did, were based on basically a fizzy pop factory. So it wasn't to do with bathtubs at all. It was fizzy pop and a brewery sort of thing. And there were lots of clever little hidden innuendos and jokes in there. John was always very good at that kind of thing. And he's very proud of that. And he's been on the podcast twice. And he's talked about it both times, about how proud he was about all the little tricks and things that they did with the bubble works, how they did some of the effects. Obviously, his background, as I've mentioned to you both things, is in James Bond films. So he had all these little tips and tricks to create a ride experience. It was really immersive, but fun. And it was a family ride and the kids would enjoy it. But there was a couple of things in there for the dads, for the mums and dads, which you had to be an adult to understand as well. So he was very proud of that. Imperial Leather obviously came along and said, well, we want to sponsor the Bubble Works. And on paper, Imperial Leather, Bubble Works, okay, fine. But they didn't just sponsor the ride with a bit of signage. They literally changed the whole theme of the ride inside. So it wasn't a pop factory anymore. It was a Bubble Bath Works, effectively. And it lost all of its charm. It lost its humour and everything that kind of made the ride special. It suddenly became basically like an advert for Bubble Bath. And it went too
far. How far do you think these things go? I'm just thinking there when you were saying all that forget theme parks like Disney or Universal, who either they own IP or they've licensed IP because that's their type of park. When it comes to like British amusement parks or theme parks, when they bring in IP, how much difference is that to sponsorship? So if you think about it, just because it's not a drinks product, it's a televisual product, and you are basically, I'm sure whatever the deal is, Thomas the Tank Land at Drayton Manor, you've licensed that, but of course, whatever, Britt Allcroft or whoever, Hit Entertainment, who own it now, will get a cut from your ticket sales and everything else. That is effectively a sponsorship, a two-way sponsorship. You're using their brand to lift you, and they're obviously taking a cut. And we've seen that with Nickelodeon Land. We've seen it with Thomas Land. We've seen it with Peppa Pig. Do we have the same sort of view on IP as we do with sponsorship? Because they're still businesses. They're still into that kind of cross-promotional relationship.
Yeah, I think there's a fine line. And sometimes, is it a sponsorship or is it an IP deal? I think it's a very close call. Think about Skyforce at the Pleasure Beach. Was that sponsored by the Red Arrows, or was that a Red Arrows intellectual property? I don't actually know. I think it's the same with both, whether it is an IP or whether it's a sponsorship deal. It's either done well or it's done badly, and it's done in a complimentary way that will stand the test of time, or it's a flash in the pan, quack cash grab, and it will end up harming both products in the end.
There's one thing that kind of came to mind. I was thinking that in recent years, we haven't really seen as many sponsorships, especially not at the Pleasure Beach. You know, Icon, Victus, Launchpad, they're all big rides without a sponsorship to them.
Yeah, that's true.
Do we think that what they've now done with Flipseria is possibly we're going to see more of this, which is the short-term shock factor, get social media, get everyone talking about it. So instead of that long-term brand awareness like the Pepsi Max over years and years and years, that now what marketing companies will be saying is actually you just stick something there that will grab attention online. So it's not about the people who turn up and ride the ride anymore. It's more about the external chatter online about it. And rides getting weird sponsorships like this more and more.
I would be very surprised if you don't see this more at Merlin Parks now. I think the fact that they've allowed a 3-week sponsorship, which, as we've said, that is kind of unheard of in sponsorship deals, that you don't do short-term sponsorships like that because they don't work. It takes much longer than that for you as a consumer to establish a relationship with a brand. It doesn't work over like one visit, 3 weeks. But I think because they've allowed this to happen now, you will see this again because there will be accountants, hello Ross, who would say, well,
we love Ross, we do really.
You got the money then, it was fine, do it again, why not? I wander it at the Pleasure Beach and I would be interested to know, and I am hoping to get someone from the Pleasure Beach on this podcast soon to talk about marketing, if that is a conscious decision to not have sponsorships available at the moment for their rides. I don't even know if they are an option.
Because the last few they've done, they've been creatively wonderful. Icon stands head and shoulders. We know the sort of theme. We appreciate it's an amusement park, not a theme park, but there is a theme, there is a style, there is a brand around Icon with the music by that bloke who's rather good. Then we've got Launchpad is the same. The reimagined Valhalla is very much the same, and Evictus. They're all of a quality that you could argue is cheapened by sponsorship.
So either they're not offering it or they're saying it has to be the right brand, which I applaud if that's the case, or they just haven't sold one. And I genuinely don't know what the answer is, but I hope it's one of the first two.
if a sponsor came to you, a theme park operator, I'm not saying Pleasure Beach, any theme park operator came to you, Glenn, and said, right, okay, we're needing to reimagine this ride, but we need the music to, reflect the fact that this roller coaster is going to be sponsored by John Smith's urinal cakes or something like that. I mean, how would you feel about that? Because it's not licensing your music, but it's then associating your music possibly with a product you think and go, I don't really want to be associated with urinal cakes, please. Is there a point where you'd almost be creatively stumped? Because you sit there going,
I know. Unless you're going down the comedy room, I don't do comedy songs. Though some people think I did. Yeah, I got there before you. Don't worry.
from a previous fun little YouTube video that you and I have done once before, there's a logo I could have put up on the screen there. Just saying.
I was going to ask, what's a urinal cake? But I don't think I want to know the answer.
They're the things they put at the bottom of urinals that make it smell nicer, yeah. Apparently.
It's the only cake you won't go near, Rebecca.
Yeah. Probably true. I can't even picture what you're talking about. I've never looked in a urinal.
That's fine.
And I never want to. So, on that bombshell. what do you think? If you've been listening to this, do you agree? Do you think sponsorships can go too far? Do you like the Flip Serious sponsorship? I will just say one more thing on the Flip Serious sponsorship. They also had done a little display opposite the entrance of round mirrors with a big Flip Serious sign on. They lasted 48 hours before they started falling off the wall. And I have had reports that there are teenagers walking around Thorpe Park with circular disc mirrors, which they found near the site of the display. So again, if you're going to do something, at least let's just do it with a bit of quality and make sure it's something that's going to last, not fall apart after 48 hours, please. But what do you think? Are you not bothered? Does it not matter? Do theme park rides, does it not matter if they get a sponsor on them? Does it not detract for you? Or do you think, no, we need to have a bit more protection for the branding and the theming, and actually that just takes it away from it? Is there a theme park sponsorship we haven't mentioned today that you think was really good or really awful? Please let me know. Wherever you're listening to this, you can leave it in the comments. If you haven't already, hit subscribe so you never miss a future episode. And if you want to leave a review, I always welcome them as well, as long as they're nice. And just one final reminder, you've got just over a week to vote in the UK Theme Park Awards. I am nominated in the content creator category. Just going to say that.
Yeah.
But you don't have to vote for me. Just vote for someone. Please vote in the awards. They're so important to show the industry what you are thinking about it in the UK at the moment. And there's loads of categories. You don't have to vote in every single one if you don't want to. But if there's a theme park who's doing something great, let them know by voting for them. I know it really does mean a lot to the people who win these awards. They are coming up very soon, mid-September. I will be there. For now, though, hope you've enjoyed today's episode. We've been Parkcast.
Parkcast. The UK's original theme park podcast.